Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Test, test, 1, 2, 1, 2.
You played his test last night when we played SmackDown 2, funnily enough.
Oh, is this how we're starting the podcast?
Maybe.
Then?
I just couldn't believe you picked test. I was just like, of all the wrestlers, I was cheeky Undertaker.
Let's set the record straight here by also saying, welcome to the UPP. My name is Jules Gill, and I am here in person with the one and only Scott Tailford. That is right, my friends. It is time for a live in-person edition of everyone's favorite morning radio show. It's the egg and the quiff back again in person. Let's go.
It's the egg and the side spike. I was modeled after Sonic the Hedgehog, but there's only so much you can do to maintain when the hair gets long.
Bring it back around to what you were saying with Test. We went to a lovely gaming bar last night in Newcastle because, yes, I'm up for a little bit to shoot some fun stuff with What Culture, and we thought that we'd do the UBP in person and have a few drinks and chill out last night, hence why we sound a little bit rough. And we went to what's called N64.
The thing is, we mentioned this, me and Josh mentioned this last week because we were in there last week when it opened. We're not sponsored, but I'm not asking for a sponsorship, but it's just funny because we keep ending up in this one barcade that's in Newcastle upon Tyne in the northeast of England because they've got a nice selection of games in there, and they had SmackDown 2 on a PS1.
On a chipped PS1.
Nice
and legal right there for you fellas. I played as Test because Test was one of the greatest undersung WWF at the time wrestlers because he was huge. He was, as to coin the phrase that the OSW use a lot, he was Roidy Magoo. He was full of the testosterones, hence the name, I assume.
You're going to break my mind for a second.
It's because of the fact that he was meant to be a roadie for Motley Crue. That was his original thing. And he would come out on to stage and say, test, test, test. And that's why his name was Test.
Yeah. That's cool. Because when I was younger, we were talking about this last night, I didn't remember that Prince Albert, I didn't realize that Prince Albert
was a
Prince Albert. Yeah, it was just a massive penis. And so as I got older, I was like, that was staring me in the face the entire time. Just didn't realize back when I was like six or whatever.
That and there was a bit where they kept on calling Test's fans testicles. And
yes,
so we had Trish Stratus saying, oh, I love my testicles. And it was like, and then they formed TNA. And it's like, it's like, seriously, that three-person power group right there was the most puerile and playground comedy. It's, like, that was Vince McMahon completely at his worst. Or, well,
that was like the
that was situations
before it was being able to
maybe
be,
not the worst thing he's
done. Before he was able to be publicly proved. But it's just the Ratchet and Clank naming convention as a wrestling tag team. Just innuendos. But anyway, the entire part of the podcast, we always ask for whatever you'd like us to talk about. We did a massive, got a massive set of questions last week, so I thought I'd just roll those over. Because like you said, we had so much recording and stuff to do this week anyway, and we had so many questions to still get to at the end of last week. So we'll still get through as many questions as we can. They're always gaming related. It could be anything, though. It could be food stuff. It could be whatever people want us to talk about.
Yeah.
And we'll see what comes up. So the first one is from Lego Brick, which I didn't realize was Lego Brick. Saw it written down a few more times, and I was like, oh, I see what you've done. He says, food hill to die on. Yorkshire puddings called popovers in America, apparently. Just learned that recently. I didn't know that they have Yorkshire puddings.
We'll pop over to America and teach them how to say it right then, because not even from Yorkshire, but I feel slightly sort of like my heckles are raised.
I would have thought it'd be like a pop through, because they sort of like they rise, like the ring stays the same and it pops up.
It
doesn't really pop over.
At the end of the day, I'm just glad that we're getting to share this cuisine with the rest of the world, because America's got some funny takes on British cuisine, because they always say, oh, it's all just brown and grey slop. And yes, that's true. We do live in a monochrome world, but at the same time,
we eat our weather.
Yeah, we do come up with some really decent stuff every once in a while, like beans on toast. This is my hill to die on. Beans on toast is a great breakfast tradition. If you don't want to get on board the beans on toast train, then get out of the station.
I can be on board with this. Where do you come down on the sauce on beans potential revolution.
Do you mean in the sense of like, okay, you've got your beans on toast, and then you decide to add in like brown sauce?
You're going to crisscross it with some brown sauce.
I have no issue with that whatsoever, because it's like when you're eating a full English, you usually have some sauce on the side, and you have beans and toast in that, and you usually use it to mop up the sauce or the eggy residue that's left over from there.
There's a way to be.
Yeah, I'm totally on board with that. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to make beans on toast, do it right. Don't just buy like a tin of beans, slop it on there and call it a day. Like Scott says, sauce is fine. Add in a bit of salt and pepper. Season that thing. Put a bit of chili powder in there. Whoa. A little bit of spice. Like bring it to life, because you're sitting down in the morning, right? And you want to have a good time.
True.
No one wants to have a bad breakfast. If you have a bad breakfast, it's likely you're going to have a bad day.
Most important meal of the day.
Do yourself a favor and take the extra 15 seconds and make that beans on toast into a winner.
I will throw in here, because I'm known for sort of tweaking things. I might have said in the past that you put cereal on a glass of milk instead of a bowl.
And then it was in an ad campaign.
It was in the Kellogg's thing. They did a tweet and I was just like, this is me, this. I mean, I didn't originate it, but like, whatever. I definitely talked about it anyway. Beans on toast, bagels. You want to get beans on bagels?
We actually popularized this in the What Culture offices, because we used to get a weekly shop brought in by them, and the bagels would be part of that, and we would have bagels and beans on toast, and that was a winner.
It's incredible. The spongier the bread, the better.
Although,
to be honest,
did you ever actually look at the back of like the bagels packages and look at the sort of energy and calorie intake on that? Mate, each bagel is apparently the same as eating four slices of bread.
Yeah, I guess if you stacked it together.
It's a thick boy. But at the same time, though, I was a bit like, oh, no wonder I'm finding it very hard to shift these love handles. Because I'm literally eating an entire baker's dozen each time I open my gob.
Just a bread roll with some peas.
Oh, man, it was quite a depressing moment, because the bagels on toast dream kind of died there for me, but still.
If you can make it work, then the old bagels and beans is a hell of a combo. Yeah. I love that we've got half a sentence into the UBP.
Not even a question.
We'll see how we go. So Lego Brick says, food hill to die on, Yorkshire puddings, called popovers in America. Excuse me, apparently just learned this recently, deserve pride of place on all Sunday dinners / roasts, not just with beef, which is apparently the rule, also on Christmas dinner. Thoughts?
Who made this rule saying that you can only have Yorkshire puddings with the beef? Like, get out of town. If you're going to be that sort of square, then just go down the farmer's market, mate.
Who's meat regulating Yorkshire? What meatist individual insists on not? Where did this even come from?
Right there is coming around there, and he's like, "Puck it." What's that thing?
Meat flapper.
Do you remember the thermometers you put in to check the temperature of meat? He's poking that into your business. Leave that alone. You put that Yorkshire pudding wherever you want. There's no wrong, no right. I've seen people, again, going back to the beans thing, full of Yorkshire pudding, full of beans, and that's been their dinner.
I've not done that.
I'm not going to lie.
Go on.
I would try it.
I would try it. I mean, I like the whole sausage casserole with Yorkshire puddings. Like that, that's really good. You can't really go wrong with Yorkshire puddings, as long as it's any meat that you can put into it. Cut it in half, cut Yorkshire pudding in half, and put the stuff into like the semicircle of loveliness, and then you eat that, and you can't really go wrong.
There was like a French cuisine.
Gaming podcast, let's go on.
I know, right? There's like a French cuisine where you cut the top off of a loaf of freshly baked bread, you pull out the inside, you fill it with cheese soup or something like that. I think that's, it might be an American tradition, I don't know, but it's like, I'm going to say French because it sounds classic.
Okay.
And the thing is, it's like, what's the difference between that and doing the exact same, but with a Yorkshire pudding as the base instead of that? Somehow that's wrong, according to the meathead.
There is that one where you get like a loaf of bread and you sort of dice the top of it, like you sort of crisscross it, and then you put cheese into the gaps.
Is that Hasselback? Is that what you call it? Hasselback potatoes is when you do that with like slices and then you put stuff in the middle of
I'm just thinking it's just bread with cheese and then you bake it and it becomes like tear and share and you just like pick up the cubes. That's why I mentioned garlic, because you put garlic in amongst that stuff with the cheese and everything.
I've just realised that you and I have not had breakfast this morning.
We've not.
I'm starving now. I'm not eating this sponsor by Greg's. No, I'm not.
Well, not at all.
I'm not going to be eating that on the podcast.
I had a coffee and I don't have it with me, but we've just sort of stumbled into the studio.
That's
after
tragic.
playing stuff.
I sit here with my large coffee, sipping it in your face, mate.
I can smell it. I mean, it's right there. I've just got to get on with my day. But anyway, Legal Brick initially asked the question about Yorkshire puddings. They should be everywhere. Just go eat Yorkshire puddings.
Yep.
And then said, also, which game has actually succeeded in the games as a service model? I can only really think of Dead by Daylight, constantly adding new characters and maps, enough to to easily make two sequels with only that only charge extra if you want them. Very, very few games, I feel, have managed to make this work. Warframe? Fortnite?
When you say games as a live service, are we counting free-to-play model games?
Yeah.
Okay, well then Rocket League.
Yeah, Rocket League, totally. I mean, they changed their pricing model over time to be free-to-play. Like, yes. It went free-to-play.
But as a live service, you're constantly getting rewards and seasonal changes and stuff like that, so I do think that's good.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess you could maybe count the Call of Duty Warzone stuff.
You could do the Battle Royale one. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. I feel like that was very, very popular and still is.
Yeah,
People are still saying that, because I have actually dropped off of the Call of Duty thing at the moment.
I play the multiplayer, but not Battle Royale.
Warzone was part of one of the mainline entries and then got its own spin-off, didn't it? Like, it's a standalone release.
Yes. So they sort of like, well, they'd initiated Blackout, which was their initial Battle Royale thing.
Oh, okay.
And then that didn't really go down very well. Then they rebooted it and did Warzone, which became the standalone Battle Royale thing. But you still access it from the same launcher, like it's still inside the Call of Duty launcher. Okay. So, yeah. So,
and then they've released a new one recently that people didn't like.
Warzone is still going. Well, they released Vanguard, which was like last year's main game.
That's what it was. Yeah, yeah. Sorry, I was just getting a bit confused with all of the releases on that.
But then they changed the maps. They try and like keep everything going in terms of the Battle Royale side of it. So when Vanguard came out and it was World War II themed, then it was like World War II weapons. And I'm sure they did map tweaks for the Warzone stuff, but they're all kind of separate. But Warzone is free to play, so that would be classed as a live service game.
Then I would count that as my.
It's weird because I love how much No Man's Sky is going, and I know that that's not a live service game in as much as it doesn't have a monetization model other than your like buy-in. It's a unit price, like you can buy it once, you get everything. But the amount of content that Hello Games have put out is ludicrous. Like they could have made 5 games at this point. Like I was looking last night on Twitter, and there's like 16 DLC packs now, and they're all like huge, and it's like that game has completely been overhauled and everything. I think there's a handful that do it right. It's just that the ones that do it wrong stand out so much more. Yeah. Like the Avengers, the Anthems, whatever.
The Avengers one is especially egregious just because of the fact that it was the post-tweaking and nerfs to make the grind even longer because they didn't have the end content created, ready to go. Mm-hmm. And it's like, once the curtain gets drawn back and you can see the end game and you can just see that you are trapped in an endless cycle and there's no real progression. Mm. Like, at the end of the day, every single game does devolve into get better loot to fight harder enemies to get better loot, and that just keeps it going and going and going. There's no real end game to it. You just get locked in that cycle. Mm-hmm. But some games make it so apparent that it's just like, what's the point?
Like, well, that's the thing. It's like the more you make, me and Benji used to talk about this, like the magic of video games, in as much as you didn't used to be able to see the statistics. Mm-hmm. So it's like now when you tell me I'm doing 30 damage and it pops off a guy, like an actual visual of like a number coming off, all the numerices of gaming, for me, it can take the magic out of it. It's not that I don't enjoy watching life bars go down, but I think there's a flow to not treating gaming like a spreadsheet.
Well, why I absolutely adore how Monster Hunter approaches its way that enemies get weaker physically.
You got to read their animations.
And it's like, depending on where you attack them, they will limp, they'll move in different ways. So you're attacking different targets and parts of the monster. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's brilliant because that's visual gameplay storytelling. Yeah. And I don't need a health bar to tell me I'm doing well. I know I'm doing well because I'm seeing it happen in front
of me.
I'm
sure the UFC games have that. I've not played a UFC game in a few years.
Well, you get to see the bruises and
the bruising and like bloods and bloods and cuts. And they have like a stamina bar so you know when a guy's going to get gassed. Yeah. And like, I mean, the old Fight Night games, I think, always had stamina bars and not health bars.
And I still absolutely adore Fight Night round 3. Absolutely.
Yes.
King.
The thing is, I don't know if it's just me. I love 360 slow motion cams. Give me 360 freeze frame cams, whatever. Fight Night had that. The knockouts in Fight Night, which is so next level. And they're not in the new boxing games. They're not in the new UFC games. Like, I want to knock a dude out in UFC and freeze frame on my heel coming through his face and show me that stuff. Like, I was just wanting to see that.
That was
and
like
never do.
One of the things that the Fight Club video game actually got right.
Fred Durst's own Fight Club.
A bit of a weird take, this one, but it's sometimes you would get like the close-up of like the X-ray shots of it connecting them, breaking the jaw of the person.
Oh, cool, like Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it was like, they did it nearly every round, whereas Mortal Kombat did the fatalities that were like the brutality style thing.
Yeah, there was the X-ray ones.
Whereas this
stuff
one,
too.
You didn't know when it was going to happen. It was just like, oh, that's just connected and really
cool.
A lot of damage.
I remember the old Tenchu Z had that
that's
as
the
well.
The one I was also thinking of. I couldn't remember. I'm so glad you remembered that.
I want to say it's called Tetsuo, but I don't think that was his name. It began with a T, I think. There was the third character you could unlock, the guy that was all like the anesthetist guy who could like stick needles in people and like kill them or whatever. And then he would just reach into people and break their bones somehow.
Crazy.
But because it was in X-ray vision, you were just like, did his hand just go like through the guy's neck to reach his neck. But anyway, so yeah, live service stuff, whatever I said, Dead by Daylight. Next question from Morgan Eyes Only, who says, why isn't there a Sleeping Dogs 2 or any game similar? There was a Sleeping Dogs 2. It was in development. It got canned. I forget why. There was a whole thing where they started spinning off the Sleeping Dogs IP to be an MMO.
Yep.
And then they put all the money, or they put increased amounts of money into the MMO to the point where it just starved Sleeping Dogs 2.
Yeah.
But if you Google Sleeping Dogs 2, there is a whole concept doc of what that game was going to be.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was a co-op thing. Like one person was Wei Shen and someone else was someone else.
Which sounds incredibly cool, but also very ambitious to the point. Like Sleeping Dogs was already quite an ambitious game for a developer that, let's face it, doesn't necessarily is not known for open world action RPG style.
Like, the only thing they did, like United Front, they've gone now. I mean, like they did that one game, that was it.
But I adored Sleeping Dogs.
Oh, dude,
I think that the combat mechanics were amazing. I enjoyed exploring the city. I thought that the vibe and the tone of it was fantastic. Like that sort of Hong Kong cop thriller style thing is not explored enough, I feel, in modern gaming.
Totally.
And I feel like there is a space for it. I just don't know who's going to step up to the plate and do it.
Well, the thing is, I went back through Sleeping Dogs and it was just last night.
You were playing SmackDown.
I found Sleeping Dogs on a different console. And but yeah, I went through that last year because I was just like, we've got time to kill. It's the lockdown. And so I went back through Sleeping Dogs and that game holds up like really, really well. Like, yes, it has the Arkham combat model, but it just plays so well. Like I said, like you said, everything about the tone, the setting, the idea of being, it's like, it's Point Break. Like it's, you're undercover, one like trying to find you, who you really are and everything. Still would massively recommend Sleeping Dogs. I remember its PS4 and Xbox One version was really buggy when it first launched. They've patched that. It just works nicely now. It's like a nice 60 FPS frame rate, whatever. Go play Sleeping Dogs. But yeah, that team, United Front, ostensibly bit off more than they could chew. And I think I remember the killing blow came from Square Enix. They just didn't want to keep funding it.
What a surprise.
What a surprise, I know. And so like there was that whole thing. But yeah, Sleeping Dogs overall is just such an incredible game.
I had a great idea for a piece of off-brand merchandise for Square Enix, which just says underperformed on a t-shirt, because that's what they keep on saying happens to all of their latest games. It's like, unfortunately, it underperformed, even though it sold like 3 million units. Unfortunately, it underperformed. Well, Deus Ex, it underperformed.
These
games are selling so well. Your problem is, mate, is that you keep on putting the price tag of your game's value all the way up, because you sink so much money into pointless stuff.
But it's also, it's nearly always their Western division as well, which is now the like, wing of the company they're trying to get rid of, where it's like, it was always like Hitman underperformed, Deus Ex underperformed, Tomb Raider underperformed. Yeah. It's just that whole thing. So I'm just like, I don't know, because I know at the minute they're trying to consolidate a lot of their assets, and it seems like they're going to get bought by someone, but they want to focus on Japanese games, which is cool. They nail their Japanese output, and that's what I love them for. But like, yeah, it just seems like things like Sleeping Dogs could have clearly been an awesome IP. Like, it's a great one-off, and like, you could have done more with it. And like, even now, like you said, no one's taken advantage of that more Eastern focused thriller stuff other than Yakuza, which has only gotten bigger over time anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Which leads Morgan said any game similar.
Yakuza.
And like, I guess if you have access to it, the old true crime games.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Because it's I'm sure Sleeping Dog like started as True Crime Hong Kong.
It was
something like that.
It's precursor.
I used to love the old True Crime games, even though there's that bit in the first one where it's all demonic and it makes no sense.
Yeah, so that bit is where you track down one of the main bosses, mm-hmm. And then it goes into his lair, and then all of a sudden you're floating flying eyeball demons, and it's like, this was not what I was expecting. And then you fight a giant dragon, and then you're like,
a freaking dragon, Jules.
Oh, freaking dragon. Forspoken, is it? Yeah. Oh, man.
Let me just talk to this cuff for a second. Hold on.
Let's just pour one out for Forspoken's latest trailer, guys. I mean, it is not doing well. It's doing the rounds.
Marketing bot 101 was hired for that. It's hopefully there's meat to that game, because the marketing
thing is
terrible.
Like, do you know what? I want this game to turn itself around and prove itself with the gameplay department that it can be great. Because at the end of the day, I'm just putting it out there, being a bit of devil's advocate. Sometimes protagonists in other games could do with like being saying less or saying less cringy stuff, because I'm just saying Nathan Drake says a lot of stuff that is a bit annoying sometimes.
That's a spicy take, that.
He's, because everyone's like, oh, he's got a quip for every occasion. Yeah. He's got a quip for every occasion. Like, just chill out, mate.
They do that in they break him down in Uncharted 4 though. They get him to be like, dude, shut up.
But especially 2, God, everything you do, he's like, whoa, that was close, bro. It's like, dude.
Oh, just, crap.
It's like every single time.
He
comes out the other side. It's like, whoa, that was close. It's just like, dude, no one's there. Just stop. Like, there can be times where you just have a character not have to say anything.
It's true. I love Nate, so I don't mind that. I think it depends how it's done. I don't even mind the idea of a super quippy character. Like, you can absolutely do the whole fish out of water story that they're going for, where someone's wrenched out of New York and is suddenly in this fantastical place. It's just that the tone in the marketing is just so like, whoa, a freaking dragon, oh my god.
They basically have gone for like, it's the Steve Buscemi Hello Fellow Kids moment. Like, I totally understand that. However, how else are you going to write this? Like, the thing is, the problem was that they decided to go down this route of the trailer.
Yes.
If they'd gone in a completely different way of not going like, hey, whoa, this is awkward. Yeah. Hey, I bet you're wondering how I got here. If they just didn't do that 80s trailer style thing.
Or leaned fully into it.
Yeah, if they'd gone full meme factory onto it and just been like, embrace the hate
like Devolver style or something.
Yeah, exactly. Then that would have actually worked in its favor. Mm-hmm. Because they're playing this earnestly, that's going down like a rock.
The thing, I have a theory, right? Because Final Fantasy or Final Fantasy Origins: Stranger of Paradise, the game that just came out,
the dialogue is
horrendous. But they steer so full bore into being horrendous that it's like, okay, you guys know what you're doing. Let's assume that you know what you're doing, and we can kind of go with it. Like, you're
it's
on the face ridiculous.
It?
It's endearing. It's kind of charming. It worked. And so my theory, if I'm going to go on their side, is that they're trying that, but with like a more Western focused script. And so they're trying to be as like memey and over the top and direct as possible, and it's just that like Westerners like us are just like, this is really cringy because we've seen this
be
done to death.
We're so cynical when it comes to this sort of stuff. Do you know what? If I was in charge of that trailer and I had to just work with what I was given, right? Mm-hmm. I would have it so that it would. You've seen The Emperor's New Groove, haven't you?
Oh my god, not for a long time. Maybe when it first came out.
Yeah. So what happens is that when they're talking, the movie stops and Kuzco comes on and like starts talking to the audience.
Right.
I would have it so that the dragon would be about to eat her, and then the game would stop and she would come on and be like, so this is awkward, like lean into how silly it is, because you turn it into like a Borderlands style over the top comedy moment, and it's like, almost like claptrappy cringe comedy.
That's
that
the thing.
Got over. Yeah. That got over.
There's like, yeah, there's a way to write it. It's the thing is, it's still going to divide people. I guess at some point they decided they were going to try and do Maximum Reach. So it's like, you get these sort of like Marvel style. It's Marvel style. Like it's very Marvel 101. But if they did what you were just saying, then they could do like to go down the Saints Row route or the Borderlands route or whatever, which in itself can be divisive. People don't like that stuff necessarily. I love the old Saints Rows, but like, yeah, the way that they've tried to split the difference, which I guess they haven't, they've tried to sew it back together and be like, let's just do something for everyone, Marvel style, isn't going down very well.
Sorry, we went completely off topic with that one there. So what was the original question?
The original question,
to make sure we actually answered that.
Oh, it was, it was Morgan Eyes Only, talk about Sleeping Dogs, and then any game similar to Sleeping Dogs, which there's not that many if you want like an Eastern thriller other than the Yakuza games, which brings me perfectly onto Dougie's question saying favorite Yakuza games.
Oh,
so I don't know if you want to, one of my favorite franchises, so.
Zero, baby.
Zero is the very good one.
Honestly, that was actually my first entry into the Yakuza series. I've done that and four
has the four protagonists.
Which one that goes turn based?
That's seven. That's Like a Dragon.
Okay, yeah. So I've done that and seven. Those are the only two games I've done. Unfortunately,
a lot of people came in on Like a Dragon. I don't know why. I guess it was just because it had the most marketing push behind
it. Yeah, and it was like, let's face it, it was the most like graphically superior. It was on every console. It had like a lot of things going. And to be honest, I'm a bit of a sucker for RPGs that have turn based stuff.
Oh, dude.
So
same.
When they announced that, and loads of people were like, "Whoa, I don't think I like this," I was like, "I love this."
No, I should have loved that a lot more than I did. I couldn't get away with the fact that they just took the original like Brawler engine and then made that turn based.
Yes.
I wanted everyone to be like in a line, like standard turn-based.
Yes.
And so in Like a Dragon, I hated where you would like tell your dude to do something and then they have to run over to the guy and do it.
Yeah.
And maybe an NPC is in the way or whatever. And I was just like, oh, like a bit of debris is in the way and it just cancels your move. And I'm
it wasn't the most refined combat system, but I did enjoy it.
No, overall it's great. And Ichiban Kazuga is a phenomenal like protagonist, like his whole love of Dragon Quest. That's why it's turn-based, whatever. That's how he sees battles. That's so cool.
But Zero is my like king because of the fact that I love the setting, I love the time period, I love the fact that you're getting introduced to a lot of threads that do sometimes get resolved in other games and things like that. I love the mini games that are in there, especially I cannot get over how much I love that Pocket Racer thing.
Oh,
the
little
cars. I thought that was brilliant. Like, it was so fun.
I mean that's a thing you can, I love, like, because I'm hopefully going to Japan eventually when like a lot of their COVID restrictions lift and everything, but I love the idea of like living in or being around like a Japanese like cityscape kind of thing and going into all the various bars and playing the games and everything else. And you can do that in Yakuza. You can just get the food and you can go and have the mini games and like get some drinks and stuff. And it's really cool. Favorites for me, my favorite is 3 because that was my first one that I finished. I like played the original when it first dropped, but that game was so mismarketed back in like 2002 or whatever, 2004.
Did it come out on PS2?
Yes, but it was marketed as like Eastern GTA because I guess that was the only way they could think of marketing it back then. Yeah. And it just is not, that's not what it is at all. Like if you go into that game wanting crime sprees and big sandboxes and stuff, it's not really that, like in terms of like mechanics. It's just not that. So I bounced off Yakuza 1 and then didn't play Yakuza 2, and then I went into 3 and loved it. And I loved how slow burn the start was. People don't like all the stuff in the orphanage because it's like, what if a retired Yakuza guy tried to raise like a bunch of kids?
Yeah.
I thought that was really good character building. So then I loved when he got wrenched back into the life that he'd left. So my favorite's actually 3. But yeah, you can't go wrong with them. 0 is a lot of people's recommended one.
It's actually, I would say it's a good entry point, 0, because of the fact that it's actually quite an easy game as well. I didn't find that there was that much challenge outside of a few difficulty spikes with a few bosses, but I did really enjoy my time.
Plus, like all the stuff with Majima, like you get like the other character you can play as. There's a great twist with Majima, the way he's presented and everything. Mm-hmm. You get his origin because it's set in the 80s.
Interestingly enough, I just saw on the way into work yesterday that the August games for the PlayStation Plus are the Yakuza games.
It's Kiwami 1 and Kiwami 2, which are the remakes of 1 and 2.
Oh, well, there you go.
That's what I was just going to say, is like they developed a whole new game engine for Yakuza 6. It's like called the Dragon Engine, where they brought in like way more physics. So when you roundhouse a guy, he like pirouettes over and smashes
so
into everything,
which
I love. Yeah, like the combat in 6 is so good. And putting that back into 1 and 2 is like, the Dragon Engine's only in Kiwami 2. So like Yakuza 1 has a great story, but it's the old engine. Yakuza Kiwami 2 plays better, but it's not as good of a story.
Not as good a story,
I would say. Yeah. So yeah, there's a lot going on in Yakuza. It's like 500 hours of Yakuza stuff. Now we had a question from Greg Hicks, who sent us a picture of a garbage plate from Rochester, New York. I sent this to you, but it would have been last week.
A garbage plate.
it was a plate of food. So,
with all the crisscross of sauces and stuff. By the way, hello, Greg.
Yes, hello, Greg. Well. So he sent us this picture. It wasn't a question. It was just garbage plate from Rochester, New York. Yeah, well, yes or no. And there was a picture, and it was home fries. This is his list of stuff that's involved. So just picture all this together, if you will.
Set the scene.
Home fries made up of fried potato cubes, mac salad, cheeseburgers, meat sauce, and assorted condiments. Now, that was all put into one mush.
Now,
I would take that.
I would as well. If I ate meat, then that would actually sound like... It's making my mouth salivate just thinking about that. Because when we went to the Fat Hippo yesterday in Newcastle, big shout out to them, not sponsored. We had some of these like dirty trash fries, which actually is the same sort of principle. Yeah. It was waffles with a cheesy, burgery sauce on,
like,
and then meat sprinkles. And then
of bacon
super
everywhere.
Spicy as well, like a little bit of Cajun seasoning.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That sounds like a bigger version of what we ate last night. And I love that.
Like a big disc version, like a dinner plate version of like a waffle fries.
Now, all we got to do, put it in a Yorkshire pud.
I would take that. That's a lot of, potato-y stuff, but you never know. Next question from Rhino, who says, do you think there's a way to write a story for an open-world game that doesn't make it lose all its agency once the gameplay kicks in? Bad example being Fallout 4, where you can save your son after months of doing side quests. It doesn't seem like the character really cared by that point.
Yes, there is a way of doing that, and that is by putting in time restraints. Or you do it so that you change the open-world formula into something that is what you would maybe consider to be level gating. Mm-hmm. So you would have it so you would leave your point of origin and your quest mark would be clear. You'd still have side quests along the way, but each of them would expire once you moved into the new area. So you were basically told, go and do these few quests now, but here's the main quest at the end. And once you do that one, you get a few more side quests. So it doesn't give you everything all at once. It gives you the whole land to explore for maybe like radiant storytelling style stuff, but the side quests are few, but continuous
and, then at the end,
rewarded with your main quest stuff. Better yet,
go on.
You tie in your side quests to what is going on at the time in your main quest.
Right.
So for example, if you're moving from point A to B, and when you get to point B, there's a climactic fight between you and like an enemy. That enemy wins or loses, but it changes the landscape slightly. So that means the side quests have gone from people saying like, oh, good morning, can you help me kill some rats in my basement, to, oh, since you lost that war, I've now lost a supply route. Can you help me get that? So you're constantly being reminded by your actions
that
there is an overarching main story that your side quests are funneling back
into. They kind of have that in Ghost of Tsushima. Like, they always have the dialogue, like NPC dialogue, but like the side character dialogue always reflects how far you are in the main story.
And that's how you should do it.
They find a great way of like, even if you mainline the main story and beat the main villain, and you haven't done any of the side stuff, they found a way to write around that. So
that's
someone's
cool.
Like, oh, my son is still missing. If you can find the time to help me, or like whatever, which I really, really like. My solution to this question, I really like what you pitched. My thing would be changing the premise. Cause for me, if there's like too much of an impetus to just do the main quest, it breaks an open world game for me. Like in Fallout 4, why wouldn't every waking second be spent finding your kid?
Yeah.
Like, there's no reason why you would be going off doing all the stuff. The random factions and everything. Same in Mass Effect 3. It's like the world is ending. Why am I doing random tax side quests?
You could basically change it so that when you do your side quests, if you haven't completed the main story, it actually gives you your classic rewards you get for doing side quests, but also maybe a negative thing happened to your character.
Right.
So it's like you've wasted time, you've wasted an opportunity, so maybe like the trail goes cold, so it's harder in the main quest for you to do or achieve this, or maybe the main quest rewards go down the longer you spend away doing other stuff.
One thing that, because my thing is like, I really love, I think Witcher 3, I think Geralt is a perfect open world protagonist, because he's just an open world, like a supernatural bounty hunter. He can take on side quests.
Yes.
He knows he wants to track down Ciri, but he knows that she can handle herself. Like, he doesn't need to get there.
His aloofness is basically like, he's like, yeah, I could go there if I wanted to.
Needs to make money, so he would go do these side things. And I've put like 25 hours into Assassin's Creed Odyssey recently. I just went back to that game, and I'm just loving that thing. Like, I love Cassandra; she's a great character. And that game does what you just said, where like if you're trying to solve like a certain, get some information from three potential quests. If you do that, you go down one route, it locks off the other stuff, or it changes the dialogue in the other stuff. I think there's ways to reflect a player's agency over time, but it needs to be balanced with a story that doesn't need you to be in a place immediately, and then you bring it all together that way.
A lot of developers just kind of lose sight of like of panicking and just being like, oh, let's just give everyone access to all of these side quests all at once. Give them stuff to do because they will find our game boring.
Don't put the game down.
But unfortunately, I don't know about you, sometimes the bloat that comes with that, I look at a map and if I see a million icons, I'm like,
I am never going to get there.
This has turned into that live service model we were talking about at the beginning of the podcast, like where I just feel like this is a grind.
Like you tell someone, like, oh, watch this TV show, it's great. Like, it's 500 hours long. It's like, I'm never going to get there. But if you go, watch this first episode, it's half an hour, maybe eventually you'll get to the 500. Yeah, yeah. Like, that's why, I mean, you were talking about One Piece before we were recording. What puts me off that, because I know it's like this mammoth thing.
It's a thousand episodes.
But if I just take the first step, maybe I'll eventually get there. Next question from Red Bear, who says, loving the podcast. Thank you very much. I'm now fully subscribed to Game Pass and PlayStation Plus Extra, both of which are great and give me access to loads of content, but do you feel like you're just downloading games and never completing anything?
Yes.
I
think we've covered this before in a previous podcast, but the way that I plan my games out now is I've got my top five. Mm-hmm. So basically, I only have five games installed on Steam and five on Game Pass. And if I am not playing that game and I've completely lost interest, get rid of it, download another one. So it keeps my game library really, really small.
I'll keep this question tight because I remember you mentioning that, because I like really love the discipline of that, because I just download everything I want. Like, I mean, I'm the buffet, I live the dip life. Like, I'll dip into a bunch of stuff and then see what sticks. But yeah, we covered that on an older one, which I shouldn't have duplicated the question, but
no, it's fine.
Gaming discipline is always good. Next question from Gaming with Greg, who says, you're going to the ultimate video game boss battle. Which song are you choosing to blast out to pump you up walking into it? Mine would have to be Gunshot to the Head of Trepidation by Trivium, absolute banger.
Yeah, to be fair, that, like, most of Ascendancy is a bit of a stormer, isn't it?
Oh, dude.
So it can be any song, not video game related.
Which song would you choose to blast out to pump you up?
Do you know what? Because I've been playing a lot of Sifu, I've gone back through it again. And I managed to, I've downloaded a load of mods to it. Nice. So now I'm playing as Neo against a ton of Agent Smiths, and I've even got like a color filter, so it filters it green.
Oh, that's
it
cool.
is amazing yeah. fun doing it like that.
Sifu's such a tight game, man.
You can
even
get a randomizer for it now, so you can add in like even bosses into your main game. It's so difficult.
If they did a Matrix game that played like Sifu, but any one NPC could mutate into an agent, kind of like Into the Matrix, that'd be sick.
That'd be amazing. Like in Mass Effect, when the Collector leader suddenly like beams in, and it's like, and you're like, oh. Damn.
I remember like all the previews for Enter the Matrix back in the day said that was how it was going to be. You would just like be in a combat scenario, and at any point someone could just like morph into an agent. Yeah. And I was like, that sounds so cool. And they just didn't do it. Like, why doesn't that happen more? The Collector thing is a really good comparison for
I think that in terms of the music, you know, when you get to the club scene and it has that beautifully pumping soundtrack going through, and you are just like beating people. I would go for something like that where it's like repetitive but hard hitting, so that I can just pump myself and keep myself in the zone. Mm. Like something maybe out of the Hotline Miami soundtrack, the one that goes out bum ba dum ba dum bum ba dum ba dum bum the Moon, I think it's called.
I think it's one of the ones by Moon. Yeah, that's like a Hotline one.
I would just go for something like that where I go in, because as great as metal is and as powerful as it is, it's
you want something to keep you sharp.
It's the chorus that really hits you for that thing, because let's face it, metal verses aren't really there to like stimulate you. It's the chorus that really gets you pumped.
Yeah.
But you can't have chorus for 10 hours unless you're doing EDM style stuff where it is like really heavy.
That's why I love
Sifu
so much. Yeah, because I mean, I miss, or I want more of things like what you said, that scene in Sifu where it's just like big thumping synth tune with just head kicking. I've mentioned head kicking a lot in this podcast, but I just want more head kicking in my games. My song would just be Electric Callboy's You Got The Moves.
Yeah.
That's just such a stupid over the top song at the minute. If you've not listened to Electric Callboy yet, go check them out. That's what's in my head at the minute. That's a big dumb song. that would fit. Final question from Ben Kratos Sagara, who says, Mistwalker Studios made a beautiful game called Lost Odyssey, one of their early projects, and it's stunning. Do you play Lost Odyssey?
The one for the Xbox 360.
Yeah, it was only four discs. That is a phenomenal game.
Mm.
You're not a fan?
I'm very mixed on this one.
Really?
Because I thought that this was going to be, well, they marketed it as being like, this is the Final Fantasy for the Xbox 360.
Yeah, yeah.
And I totally like expected that.
I'm sure it was by the Final Fantasy creator.
Yeah, it was. And it like has a great premise. Uh-huh. It has a great set of characters for the most part. It has a pretty decent combat system.
Oh, I love the combat.
But I just felt like I didn't ever fully click. It never really moved into full gear with me.
Oh.
And it's because I think that there was one or two characters that really annoyed me. I think that there's these... The child characters in there,
I've not played it since like 2006 or whatever.
I don't know. There was a few bits where it was just kind of like, they were constantly like, you can't remember, can you? You've got amnesia. And it's like, I know. It is mean to remind somebody of a condition that they have no control over.
Like that,
Stop telling me I can't remember stuff.
That cat in Persona 5 that just...
Oh, Morgana.
I hate Morgana so much.
That
thing, dude. I hate that cat. Because it's like, I just want to go outside. I've got this one thing left to do, Morgana. Can I just go and do this one quest? No, you've got to go to bed. Just go to bed.
sleep.
Just
go to sleep.
Oh, God, no. I hate that thing. I hate that it speaks for you. I hate that it says the wrong things. It misrepresents what I want to do. It gets in the way of me. I despise it. Stupid cat. And I'm a cat person. But, like, yeah, for, in terms of Lost Odyssey, the actual question was, what other studio with a very short history put out an absolute killer game out of nowhere? I guess we couldn't have Sleeping Dogs, but that could have been one of them. But for Lost Odyssey, though, I loved, he plays that dude, Calm or Kame. It's like K-A-I-M. The dialogue bits, the text bits that you would find where it was like their memories.
Yeah, they're
I thought they were incredibly well written. Mm. And it's like, because he's immortal, so it's like, but he also can't remember anything.
Yes.
So he's lived like 1,000 lives, but he doesn't remember any of them. Yeah. So you're finding like remnants of people he's touched or talked to. And I'm sure one of the text entries is that you find he lived a whole life with a family and then they slowly died and he realized he couldn't or something. Yeah. And I was like, that's really, really well. I love that stuff. It's really well done. But yeah, combat-wise, it is just turn-based 101 with the Final Fantasy VIII, hit the button at the right time.
I don't know. It was just like, it had all the right elements, but I just felt that it lacked a little bit of the passion to get me through there. But I totally understand that people really like this game. It just wasn't what I was looking for.
That's fair. I think, and I wish they would like put it out on Series X or something. I would love to at least go back to it for a little bit.
The problem is the question that we've got, which is like a banging game that...
I've got a hell of a shout
only
for this.
One the developer did and then disappeared. Yep. I can't remember the developer
hard.
Names.
I just thought of my shout for this would be Polytron, which was Phil Fish's company for Fez, because he did one game, which I know was a whole mess of stuff. Phil Fish said some stupid stuff in regards to the quality of Japanese games. One of the many things that made people just go F this guy or whatever. But still, dude made Fez or helped make Fez alongside other people at Polytron. And so that game was like that part of that initial early 2010s indie rush of like, look how awesome this other like tier of development can be. Yeah. Fez is still a phenomenal game. Yeah, like 2D side-scroller that is actually rendered in 3D and you can rotate the camera and whatever. It's really cool. So my shout would be Fez. But it depends if you have any other shouts. You can join me in the Phil Fish wagon.
It's just the case of like, I'm thinking of loads of games that came out that I like, but I've no idea if it like the developer did them and then disappeared afterwards. Mm-hmm. I mean, I will always miss Pandemic, who made the original Star Wars Battlefront games.
There's Visceral as well. I mean, I know that they were going for a little, Raven. I mean, the thing is, like, I think of like portions of dev time, like Raven's had like this whole run towards the 2000s where they had the X-Men Legends games and that Singularity. I will always shout out Singularity. It's like the Titanfall 2 of its time. This really, really cool first-person shooter mystery thing that's like narrative-driven. It's like Bioshock with a timey-wimey plot where you're going back and forward in time. You don't realize what you're changing in the past is affecting the future.
Yeah.
That game is so tight and it's not available anywhere and it was just phenomenal and that was Raven. And so before they got consumed by the Call of Duty machine. So I kind of think of like Windows like that.
Yeah.
Like Visceral as well, like Dead Space and everything.
I guess you could count like Clover Studios before they became Platinum Games. Like when they did like the Beautiful Joe stuff and things like that. Like
that's a shout.
Absolute bangers that came out and then it was just like, bye. Okay, like, we're going to be absorbed into Platinum Games now. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that it makes me think of that Blade Runner quote where it's like, you did shine so brightly, Roy, or whatever. You managed to get like so many things out there for a certain amount of time. But yes, massive thank you to everybody for sending in their various questions. We managed to get through more than one.
That's good for us.
We did all right.
Very good.
And we've got some more to carry over, but we'll do a fresh batch next week. We might even do another in-person podcast in 2 weeks' time.
Yes, because I'll be back. Because you might be around again. Yes.
So we'll see how it goes. But massive thank you to everybody for sending in their questions. For now, this has been the Untitled Banner Podcast, the UBP, the UBP.
UBP.
The UBP. I've been Scott Tilford. You've been Jules Gill.
I have indeed. And remember, check in next Thursday for your chance to ask your questions for us, gaming related or otherwise, over on Twitter. I'm at RetroJ with a 0 and Scott is at /LP89.
Beautiful. We'll catch you all next time.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.